If you're worried about your application being unique, what you should be worried about is making sure your application is true to you as an individual, and then it will be unique amongst our applicants. Even if, like you mentioned, Max, the overall kind of topic of the essay is maybe similar or even the same to other students, the way that you as an individual are going to write about it is going to be different than someone else is going to. As long as, again, you're doing that self-reflection, you're trying to be genuine to yourself.
Welcome back to the DEI Podcast. I'm Max Gaston. On today's episode, we are excited to have back in the studio our very own Director of Admissions at Notre Dame Law School, Marisa Simon, joining us to answer your burning questions about the admissions process. Marisa and I have been soliciting questions on social media from prospective students, asking you to tell us what you want to know about the law school admissions application and the process. And today, we're going to be answering those questions in depth. We'll dive into the specifics of applying to Notre Dame Law and discuss some valuable insights that can help you navigate the application journey more effectively. And like we've done in the past, we'll tie in some of the core values at ND Law, like inclusion and belonging, that make this place an ideal destination for anyone looking to pursue a legal education. Here is my interview with Marisa Simon. Marisa, welcome back to the DEI Podcast.
Thanks, Max. Thanks for having me.
So we've done this three times now. This is the third time that we're doing it. And the first two times were audio only. You were the first guest, I think, that I interviewed when we launched the podcast. And you're now the first guest in studio when we are on video. So first of all, can you believe we've made it this far? And how does it feel to be, I guess, the guinea pig of the DEI podcast, like letting us, you know, launch all these episodes with you?
Sure. I mean, I'm not going to lie. This is not something I do regularly. And so this is a little nerve-wracking for me. But happy to answer questions for students, of course.
Yeah. So we are going to dive into all the questions that we were pulling online. But before we jump into them, I guess maybe just a warm up of it's a new admission cycle. Mm-hmm. It's the first admissions cycle since we've had a class join as 1Ls from the Students for Fair Admissions decision. How does it feel for you kind of staring down, you know, the pipe of a new cycle? And is it always the same, or is there a particular vibe in this cycle in particular?
Sure. There are a lot of factors that change every year from cycle to cycle. A lot of different influences that we're dealing with, as well as different goals and initiatives of the law school. And so there definitely is a shift. The SFFA decision was unprecedented. So, changing how we look at admissions, of course, always taking a holistic viewpoint at each individual application and also to our process as a whole. And so that is something that obviously we are continuing to do. But it has, it has changed, what we're prioritizing in the admissions process.
Hmm. Do you feel like the questions from students have changed? Because I know, and again, we'll get into it, but we do have those general questions that we get from students all of the time when we're on the road or when we're doing information sessions. But just given that there have been some unprecedented events that have happened between now and maybe a year, a couple of years ago, have the questions changed at all from what you've seen?
The questions have changed. I wouldn't say that they've changed necessarily around SFFA. I think there, especially because there was a lot of, news and media stories about the decision, that students are aware of that. We're trying to address that as we can, especially as we did with the podcast last year. But in the way that the questions have shifted, it's not exactly about that topic in particular. I've just seen kind of a change, over the years of what students are primarily concerned about.
Mm. And we should just say for folks who are listening, I think everyone knows by now, but in case people don't know, when we're referencing SFFA, we're talking about Students for Fair Admissions v. Harvard and its companion case, Students for Fair Admissions v. UNC, where the Supreme Court issued a decision essentially bringing an end to affirmative action in college and university admissions programs. And so that's sort of the background that we come to this with. But so we did solicit a number of questions from students, and some of them are things that you and I have both seen before. Some of them are things that we haven't seen before. So why don't we get into some of these, and we can give students a little bit more perspective on what they want to know.
Sure. And maybe just to add a little bit more context to the questions that are being asked, students have always asked about diversity at the law school, you know, how we are trying to, you know, recruit a diverse class every year. So just to say that those questions haven't changed, I would say it's in part because mm-hmm. those questions have always been asked.
Mm. Yeah. And one of the things that I really noticed was that students were asking those questions, for me at least, in a more nuanced way. You know, they want to know more, what can I say in my essays, for example?
Sure.
Whereas maybe before they would just, you know, write it on their own. And maybe even sometimes we're seeing people having a bit of a backlash of, do I have to talk about X, you know, or am I free not to? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've talked about kind of the pejorative term trauma dumping, and people are saying, do I have to talk about traumatic experiences, or am I free to talk about whatever I want to talk about in my statements? And so, you know, all things that we can get into as we kind of dive into these questions. But what I wanted to bring up first was some questions around early decision and splitter applications. And so the first one is, with early decision gone, how can split applications, so split applicants, low LSAT, high GPA, boost their applications for ND law?
Sure. And I do want to address these separately since they really are kind of separate issues. Maybe one applicant is kind of looking at both of those. But in terms of the early decision, so that is typically for some law schools, that's a binding process where if you apply, then you must commit to attending if you are admitted. That was a program that we had. We eliminated that a couple of years ago as one of our measures to try to make the admissions process more equitable for students who maybe come from disadvantaged backgrounds and can't make that commitment of willingness to attend without knowing what the scholarship offer is going to be. So we did eliminate that. In terms of us considering a student's interest or desire to attend Notre Dame Law School specifically, that's something that we've always considered. And so, yes, applying for early decision was one way for a student to demonstrate that interest. But really, we're looking for more than just a checkbox, as we are with everything else, right? Of in a more nuanced way, why is a student interested in Notre Dame Law School? How does it speak to their own personal goals and personal values, the kind of program and community that we offer? So that's really what we're trying to learn from students. And so we want anyone who has an interest in Notre Dame, which hopefully if you're applying, you have an interest, to answer the why Notre Dame statement. We do have a specific prompt for that, but generally you should be telling us why you want to attend Notre Dame Law School. Again, how it fits with your values, with your personal goals. And we're going to read every one of those statements from every student. That's really the way to demonstrate your interest is through that statement in your own words. And you get up to 2 pages to do that. So rather than just kind of that single checkbox of early decision.
And I guess for folks who might be at the earlier stages of the process, can we just explain some of the jargon that we're using? So what is a splitter in the first place?
Sure. So a lot of people talk about splitters in terms of someone who has either an LSAT score that's above the median for the school that they're applying to and a GPA that is below the median of that law school, or the reverse of that with a GPA that's higher than the median of the law school they're applying to and an LSAT score that's below that school's median. So sometimes you'll hear people talking about, you know, a high GPA, low LSAT, high LSAT, low GPA. But really, when we mean low, it really just means below the median, which for us, given how high our medians are, is still very, would still be considered a very high LSAT score and a high GPA. So we try to stay away from those terms, but really refer more to the splitters as just being above or below the median marker. So for that student who was asking, I think we got actually 2 questions from applicants who have who are in that position of having a GPA above the median and an LSAT below the median for us at Notre Dame. Those, for one, that's kind of one of the larger sections of our applicant pool. We do have far more applicants in that kind of subsection than we have of applicants who are splitters in the other way. So a higher LSAT score with a GPA below the median. And so in that sense, because we need the same number of both of those students in order to achieve a median of hitting both of those numbers right in the middle, it does become then more competitive for a student who is a GPA splitter because they're competing with more students who are in that section of our applicant pool. That doesn't necessarily mean for any one individual student that their chances of admission are necessarily changing. It all depends on the application as a whole. So I mentioned briefly of, you know, holistic review and holistic admissions. That means we read the whole application and make a decision based off of that. So in the same way that a student who, you know, may have a GPA above the median and LSAT below the median, that we're going to take into consideration the resume, the personal statements, letters of recommendation, even more information from the transcript itself rather than just a single point of a cumulative GPA. We're doing that for all applicants, as we do for the LSAT splitters, as we do for students who have both stats above the medians and for students who have both stats below the medians. It just depends on kind of who else are you competing with in that pool and, you know, what their applications look like. Since our applicants don't know what everyone else's applications look like, and we're going to get more into this, I'm sure, with some of the other questions that we have from students, is for the student to really focus just on themselves and less about kind of how to be competitive in the pool without knowing what the rest of the pool looks like other than some of the information I just shared, to really think about themselves and how to highlight their best characteristics, how to represent themselves in the best light possible.
Right. And so the question that you were responding to as well was, how often are splitters high GPA, low LSAT admitted? And is there any advice for that type of candidate? And I think you kind of gave the advice really perfectly. Something that I've heard you say when we're on the road with people is the vast majority of students who get accepted to our program are splitters. And I think that part of what this question is getting at to me is there's sometimes might be a disincentive that students feel if they think to themselves, I'm below the median in some way, then they might self-select out of applying in the first place. And recognizing and appreciating that a lot of students might be below one of those, you know, those two median numbers. And that shouldn't stop you from submitting an application and doing your best, putting your best foot forward so that you could try to get accepted.
Right. We do admit quite a number of students. The majority of students that we admit are splitters, like you said, either LSAT splitters or GPA splitters. But also the we, of course, are admitting students who are below both medians, just as we're admitting students and enrolling who are above both medians. So one thing I tell students that I can say with certainty is that you will not get admitted if you don't apply. That I know for sure. So if you want to find out if you will be admitted, you're going to have to apply to find that out. So if I will just add a note, this is not part of one of the questions, but if the fee for the application itself is a barrier to you, please let our office know. And that's something that we want to make sure is not an issue.
Yeah, I do think that, and this is just kind of touching on more expanded topics, but I do think that so you and I started at the same time, and sort of watching you as the admissions director, I do feel like you've tried really intentionally to remove unnecessary barriers where they were there, case in point, ending the early decision process in the first place. Something that I think students don't always hear, and it's another thing that I love that you say, is we're looking for reasons to accept you, not reasons to turn you away. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. You know, as I mentioned before, for every application, we're reading through the application. Obviously, we can see, you know, the numbers kind of as we pick up the application, but we are looking for reasons to admit a student. On the one hand, we're looking for students who we expect to be successful in our program. So we're looking for that potential both on the academic side and also on the professional side. So looking again at kind of all pieces of the application. But we're also looking for students that we really want to be a part of our community at Notre Dame Law School. It's our mission and our values are very important to important to us as a law school. And so we're looking for students for whom those are important as well. We're looking for students who kind of know what their values are, have done some self-reflection, see how that fits in with the Notre Dame mission, and can articulate that to us then in the application. So that is, you know, important to us in the same way the other pieces of the application are in terms of that, you know, as I mentioned, academic and professional potential for success.
And just while we're on the topic of splitters, and you can have a splitter who is a high GPA, low LSAT, or the other way around, for folks who do struggle with the LSAT, what is some advice that they should know? And I should also say that we have covered this topic in depth in the previous two podcast episodes that we've done, but you know, it's nice to have something that we can put on, you know, on social media that people can see, but also maybe if there's just a different way, or if there's anything new that you would add to the advice that we've continued to give to students, what do you think students who are maybe struggling with the LSAT, are multiple LSAT takers, what should they know?
Sure. So from the first question, or the second part of the question, multiple LSAT takers, do know that we're considering the highest LSAT score that you submit to us. So, you know, we can see all of the LSAT scores. Those are sent to us by LSAC. But when we're determining our admissions decision, we're considering the highest LSAT score that's submitted. Unless there is a really large discrepancy between multiple scores that you have, there's no need to explain or ask us to consider the highest of your score. That's something that we're going to do automatically. If you have not performed to what you believe is your best ability on the LSAT, and there's a specific reason for that, please let us know in an addendum on the application. So that is something that, you know, we're only aware of your circumstances if you share that with us.
So like if there was a death in the family, if there was illness
or something. Yes, we've had students explain, you know, that they got sick or, you know, and that there's only, you know, so many times that the student was able to take the LSAT either for just, you know, reasons of finances or time or or whatever it is. And so we are considering, again, that highest score. I would say kind of a blanket statement of I'm just not a good test taker. We're going to need more than that from a student, particularly because there's a pretty big exam at the end of law school that you're going to have to take as well. And we want to have the confidence that you're going to pass the exam, the bar exam, and become, you know, a practicing attorney. You know, if there are, you know, measures that you've taken to improve your test taking strategy or abilities or test anxiety, you know, you're welcome to share that with us of kind of how you've worked toward that. But to be mindful of, you know, what the requirements are for law school, in terms of taking exams.
This next question is pretty brief, but it covers a big topic. Any advice for the personal statement?
Yes, there's lots of advice that I love giving to students when I do get to talk to them. I'll go through as much of that as I can while we're here today. So I'll try to go maybe chronologically for a student who's starting their personal statement. If you haven't started it yet, I think one way to approach it is to have someone close to you interview you. You can even give them the questions. It could be the prompts to, you know, the essays that you're writing for various law schools. That should include, you know, why are you applying to law school? Why do you want to be an attorney? What are you going to do with that degree? You know, why are you applying to the programs that you've selected? And to have a conversation with that person rather than trying to sit down to your computer and just type out, you know, kind of whatever comes to your mind. I know for me, if I'm just staring at a blank computer screen, it's much more difficult for me to think of ideas than it is when I'm just talking to, you know, a close friend or a family member, and just talking, especially if you're passionate about this topic, talking about, you know, how excited you are to go to law school. So I think that's a nice way to get started. You can have that person take notes for you, or you could just record the conversation and then use that yourself. And then that way also, you know, everything that you have is your own words of you explaining, you know, your path toward law school and kind of what you want to get through on your application. And so then you have that those references as a starting point to actually sit down and write the essay.
That point, I think that once you have that sort of outline there of I've gotten some feedback from the person who has interviewed me and I have an idea of where I want to go, some of the maybe things that are always true is remember when you're talking about whatever your story is that you're talking about, it has to tie back into why do I want to go to law school? Mm-hmm. You have to explain in the broader story of who you are and what's motivating you, why you want to pursue a legal education.
Sure. Sure. Yes. We're definitely looking for that answer from your application as a whole. Some students may answer it in other sections of the application, which is perfectly acceptable. But once we finish reading your whole application, we should know why you're applying to law school. We should know why you're applying to our program specifically. Those are, questions that should be answered, again, by the whole application. And that you've really considered it. Law school is a big investment in terms of time and finances and just mental capacity, right? Yeah. And so, we want to know that you've really considered that and are ready to make that commitment, not even just for Notre Dame, but for law school in general.
Mm-hmm.
So once a student is able then to start writing their personal statement and getting their ideas out, I do encourage students to write down as much as they need to, and then to look at that whole statement and pare it back to two pages. We can tell when someone has started writing their essay and just abruptly stops after the two-page mark, and that's not what we're looking for. If you go over two pages by a line or by a small paragraph, that's not at all an issue. We're not going to stop reading or kind of discount people for that. What really matters more is the content and the quality of the writing. So, once you look at that, do you realize, oh, there's a page and a half of an anecdote that really can be just one paragraph, and making sure that the essay as a whole is focused on you as a person and kind of how you've developed. Maybe that anecdote leads to why you've applied to law schools and the skills that you've gained. But it should not just be an interesting story. We really are trying to learn about the applicant from the personal statement. It should be personal to that person.
Yeah, and you mentioned content and quality, and that speaks to something that we'd covered last time when we did this, which was the authenticity of the statement itself, and the statements that are more interesting for us to read, and the ones that we get really excited about are the ones where the student is being really true to who they are, regardless of if it's a story that's been told multiple times before by other people who have had similar experiences. Right. And so can you talk a little bit about this thing that we hear from students a lot of, how do I stand out? Or I think the word that's become kind of just, don't say that word in our office, is just unique. How do I make my application unique? My personal statement?
Right. Each application is going to be unique by the nature of each individual being unique. So if you're worried about your application being unique, what you should be worried about is making sure your application is true to you as an individual, and then it will be unique amongst our applicants. Even if, like you mentioned, Max, the overall kind of topic of the essay is maybe similar or even the same to other students, the way that you as an individual are going to write about it is going to be different than someone else is going to. As long as, again, you're doing that self-reflection, you're trying to be genuine to yourself. So kind of as I was trying to say before, of instead of focusing on other applicants or what the applicant pool looks like, is just trying to make sure that your application is as genuine to you. And like I said, taking some time for self-reflection, making sure that you have a strong understanding of what your own values and priorities are, and how that is dictating how you're leading your life, including this application to law school. And so, whatever it is for you as an individual that you feel like you need to share with us, that's what we're looking for. And so, you had mentioned before this issue of, students feeling like they have to talk about certain experiences. And I don't know if this is, I'm getting ahead of any of your questions, but if you feel like a specific experience or a set of experiences is central to, your pursuit of a legal education, then that is important for you to discuss in your application. If it is an experience that happens to be traumatic, we don't want to make students feel like they have to talk about that. If you're uncomfortable writing about something, then we don't want to make you do that. We want students to write about what it is that you really want to tell us. If it is a traumatic experience and you feel like it's important for your story and you want to share that in the application, of course, then you're also welcome to do that. Maybe just put a little you know, something at the beginning. So we maybe right. a little bit about, we know what's coming when we start that fresh application, but that's really just more of a self-preservation. But also, if you don't have a traumatic experience to write out about, please do not make one up or make an experience sound more traumatic than it is just for the sake of shock value. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to learn about each individual applicant, what's important to you. Standing out in the applicant pool is not the same thing as being admitted. Those are not mm-hmm. one and the same. And so there are plenty of applicants who stand out for the wrong reasons, or stand out, but the rest of their application isn't going to be, you know, competitive ultimately. Mm-hmm. So what you as an applicant really want to do is to, like I said, think about your characteristics, your values, you know, highlight mm-hmm. yourself and what your strengths, what's really important to you. If there are weaknesses of your application that you want to acknowledge, to do that too. But also to be confident that that you're on the right path. This is something that I maybe, again, is selfish for me to think about. But I know we're in a competitive applicant pool that, you know, we can't admit everyone who applies. We can't sure. admit everyone that we like or that we think is going to be successful at Notre Dame right. Law School. There are many students that we are not admitting that that we would like to have as part right. of our community, but we're just, we try to keep our community small for reasons of, trying to make sure opportunities are available mm-hmm. to our students and all of that. But the comfort of knowing that most of the applicants, these applications that we're reading are strong applications, right. and that those students are going to be able to go to law school and to become practicing attorneys and have successful careers. Yeah. And so for students also too, that knowing they're putting their best foot forward, that they did the best they could with their application. Mm-hmm. This is the time to find out then kind of what happens next. But having that confidence of knowing that whatever mm-hmm. the next step is, that is going to be kind of a positive step forward on their journey.
Yeah. And part of what you were touching on when you were discussing what students talk about in their statements was the idea of, do I have to talk about my trauma? And I think that that conversation among students and prospective students, that is, really emerged because of the Students for Fair Admissions decision. And so I want to read what you read last time we did an episode on this from the court's opinion. That clarified what students could or could not talk about. And it's specifically where Chief Justice Roberts says, "Nothing in this opinion should be construed as prohibiting universities from considering an applicant's discussion of how race affected his or her life, be it through discrimination, inspiration, or otherwise." And so I think the really helpful thing to take away for students is knowing that restrictions and limitations from this opinion apply to the school, mm-hmm. not to the students. Right. Students are free to vocalize whatever experiences they believe are true to them and have supported their pursuit of a law degree. Mm-hmm. If you want to tell us your race, if you want to tell us your gender, if you want to tell us your background, and you can show us how those things stimulate mm-hmm. And drive a motivation to do something in your career if they've inspired you. And that could be discrimination, mm-hmm. But it doesn't have to be discrimination. Mm-hmm. I think the message is, we want you to have the freedom to express whatever you believe you need to right. Make the application what you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. I agree completely that students have to, be genuine to themselves, think about what it is that they want to share, and that the restrictions are placed on our office. And so, we're the ones that really need to be aware of what we can and cannot consider once we actually open up an application. But again, for the maybe for students to focus on the depth of what they're saying. Mm. That's, again, going to make the application more unique, more authentic. Mm-hmm. If students are kind of staying at the superficial level, maybe mm-hmm. that will only reveal things that we may not be able to consider. But the deeper a student can go into what's really driving them, mm-hmm. your passion, your enthusiasm can come through in the application.
Right. And quality is not shock value.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So you don't need to think of, we were talking about this offline the other day, you don't need to make it like Game of Thrones in the last two seasons where the whole message is, how can I surprise the reader the biggest way? But just be true to yourself, even if it seems yeah. mundane to you. If it's right. true to yourself, that is going to be a much stronger sell.
Right. Yes. Mundane topics can come off as very good essays if the writer is passionate about that topic.
Yeah. And so this is something that's true not just for the personal statement, but also for the supplemental statements. And you talked about one of them earlier, which was the Why Notre Dame statement, but we also have the different kind of lawyer statement. Any feedback or advice you want to share about either of those and the approach to those?
So I will say, and we've said this in our other podcasts, we actually say it on the application itself that we recommend or encourage applicants to complete these essays. We also acknowledge that it is possible the prompts overlap in some ways, that a student might feel that what they've already written in their personal statement or in one of the optional statements may overlap with what they've said it, or what the prompt kind of leads to in another statement. That's perfectly fine. When we ask students to submit, you know, this whole application with potentially, you know, three different statements, we're really looking for as complete of a picture as possible. And like I said, at the same time, we're reviewing the resume, we're reviewing the transcript as a whole, trend in grades, coursework, all of that, letters of recommendation. So we're trying to put together a complete picture of the applicant. So as much as one individual can look at those different prompts and try to, you know, speak to them in different ways or get to different pieces of their personality or of their experiences or of their background and use, you know, each of the two different two-page essays to get to that.
And just to bookend the topic of the written statements, you started by suggesting that students or applicants get someone to interview them. I've also heard you suggest people do that at the back end of their statements once they've got them sort of fleshed out and they have a clear draft. Can you talk about that?
Sure. So at the beginning stage, I think it's helpful if it's someone who knows you well, who when they interview, maybe they can ask follow-up questions that kind of help draw more out of you in terms of, oh yeah, I didn't think about that, of something like to include. You know, sometimes your friends or close family, you know, recognize your positive characteristics maybe sometimes easier than it is to see in yourself. But once you do have that essay written and you feel like it's in its final draft form, when you have someone review it for proofreading, you know, maybe consider someone who doesn't know you as well. Obviously, you have to know them well enough to ask them for this favor. But maybe it's a professor or someone like that, or maybe like a colleague if you're working, to read through the essay and, you know, to get a little bit of feedback from them. Because when you have that personal statement, you as the author and then also, you know, your close friends and family, they know all the context that you are not including in the personal statement. And we as an admissions office, usually for all applicants, don't have that context. So when we're reading an application, you know, all we get from you is what's in the application itself. So if you have someone who doesn't know you as well, do a review of that statement. They may be able to tell you, you know, it's still unclear to me why you are pursuing law school, or I don't understand why this particular anecdote is relevant to the rest of the essay. You know, things that maybe when you spend so much time in it yourself that you're not seeing. So, you know, if it is possible for you to have someone proofread your essays, I think that can be valuable in getting some feedback in the way that the admissions office might be seeing the essay.
So this next question, shifting topics, is sort of bearing on the non-traditional student aspect of things. Is graduating in 3 years from undergrad a bonus, or does it hurt your application?
Sure. So for this particular question, graduating in 3 years, there's a little bit of it depends, which is often our answer for a lot of questions from students.
Everything is it depends.
Everything is it depends. I'm sure for lawyers too.
Yeah, literally.
But for students who are graduating in 3 years, it's that in and of itself is not a concern to us, or necessarily a benefit either. You know, we understand there are many different reasons why people graduate in 3 years from their undergraduate. And so it's what really is more important to us is, for one, obviously how you performed in your undergraduate coursework. So the cumulative GPA, as well as I mentioned, the trend in the grades, you know, the difficulty of the courses that you're taking, that kind of review. But then we're also looking at the resume. So we do find sometimes with students who went straight from high school into their bachelor's degree and then are finishing in 3 years, some of those students may not have as strong of a resume because they haven't had as much time, you know, since high school. But that's not the case for everyone. So we certainly have applicants, who are 21, who are graduating college in 3 years, who have put a lot of work into their summers or even internships during a semester, and have a lot to show for those 3 years. Mm-hmm. Sometimes resumes that are stronger from someone who's 5 years out of college. It just depends on what you've been doing with your time. So for us, it's much more of a concern of, what does your resume look like? What are your professional experiences? What is your level of maturity? Again, there can be a 21-year-old who's more mature than a 29-year-old. Mm-hmm. Just depends on the individual person. So we're trying to get that sense from your application of, what have you accomplished so far? What can we expect for your potential, in law school and beyond?
And I do think that when it comes to the resume piece of it, what have you accomplished? It's helpful, I think, to have legal experience. That's great. But I think that the what have you accomplished is more when you're pursuing your own interests. How deep have you delved into, how far down that rabbit hole have you gone? Have you been able to hold leadership positions? Have you, won an award in the thing that you were doing? Have you achieved something? Have you really learned something from that?
Have you contributed to your community?
Whether
that's your campus community or your local community, part of what we're looking for is how do we expect you to contribute to the Notre Dame Law School community, both during your time as a student and as an alum once you graduate. So we're looking at those pieces of it, too. In terms of what you mentioned with legal experience, I think, again, what we're looking for is, have you done enough to really understand the commitment that you're making to go to law school? Mm-hmm. For some students, that means approaching a different career path and deciding that is not the right one and that law really is. Mm-hmm. So those students may not have legal experience, but have had experiences that led them to apply to law school. Whereas for other students, they need to have that experience in a law firm, see what the day-to-day is like for the attorneys to decide that is the path that they want to take. So again, it's more about you as an individual. What do you need to do to find out whether or not law school is the right path for you? Mm-hmm. And then to be able to kind of explain that in the application.
And I think you sort of answered this question just now, but the question is, what kinds of extracurriculars are you looking for in an applicant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't matter. We want to see that you're active. So again, that could be on the kind of the professional side. It could be contributing to your community. And that can even be, on a smaller level of within a dorm or, a student club, things like that. There are no specific types of clubs or internships or service projects that we are necessarily looking for. Mm-hmm. Like I said, a lot of people are going to come on their path to law in different ways. And in a lot of ways, law touches kind of every aspect that even if it's, not something that's directly relevant, that there are skills to be gained, there's knowledge to be gained that's going to ultimately be relevant to your career as an attorney. So we really want students to do what they want to do. If you make decisions based off of what you think I want to see or what everyone else is doing, that's another question we got a lot too, is kind of, well, what's popular? Like, what does everyone else do? That's not going to help you. In life, just ultimately, but also for your application. If you choose activities or internships that are interesting to you, that's where you're more likely to be successful because you're pursuing what you're passionate about. So we really encourage the students to do that in a way, of course, that's productive with your time. So we just want to see how you're being productive. What are you doing with your time? And how are you taking initiative towards things that you are interested and passionate about?
If a student submits an application on September 1st, when should they expect to hear back?
Sure. So thank you for submitting your application in early September. We will not start releasing decisions until either late November or early December. And so that's the earliest anyone will get a decision. So likely for that September 1st applicant that they should expect a decision hopefully by early December. It really shifts throughout the cycle of when a student applies to when they should expect to hear back from our office. the majority of our applications will come in December and January. And so that's when it really starts to slow down. Mm-hmm. Not to say that a student who applies in October or November should necessarily expect to hear in December. You know, we will try to work through applications as quickly as we can. There are a lot of factors that influence how quickly we can get a decision to a student. Some of it is, you know, is the applicant pool and how many applicants we have and what the strength of those applicants are. Some of it also has to do with the staffing in our office, you know, how available we are to respond to applicants. So, so we don't kind of want to put, you know, any guarantees out there, but to make sure that we're able to try to move through applications as quickly as possible.
So this next question is focused more on the inclusion side of things. It is, how is ND Law working to make the campus more inclusive, parentheses, diversity-wise?
Sure. So I know, Max, you and I talked a little bit about this question of trying to understand what, without knowing who's asking this question or being able to ask them for more context, to try to explain it as broadly as possible, or maybe with different interpretations of this question. And so for the on the admission side, in terms of, you know, we have different initiatives when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion. I mentioned a couple times of initiatives we've taken to make the admissions process more equitable. We are also trying to make sure that we every year, for a long time, it's been our priority to bring in a diverse class. And that means so many different things to us, too. I have a lot of different priorities to balance, you know, as a director of admissions. But it is one of our top priorities to make sure that each class that is coming in is diverse. Obviously, with us following, you know, any rules or laws, even as they change. So we're taking different measures. That's going to change every year in terms of what we're able to do, what we have the resources for, in terms of trying to admit, enroll, and recruit a diverse class. It is also, I'll mention, a priority of the dean, and I'm sure you'll talk about that too when it comes from your perspective, to have a diverse and inclusive law school. And again, there's so many different things that those words mean, but making sure that we're doing that from the admission side is in terms of the group that's coming in. I will also say we're not only trying to enroll a class that's diverse, we're trying to enroll a class that's inclusive, as not just a class as a whole, but as each individual, which is something that you can talk about in the statements. You know, inclusivity and belonging is a value that we mentioned in our Wind Your Name statement. So that is something that each individual student can share with us in terms of their own personal values and priorities. And then I'll let you, given your role, talk more about the community that's actually at the law school, you know, after they come through our office.
Yeah, and so that's probably the other piece of this question. You know, what does inclusion look like at Notre Dame? And kind of from the diversity perspective and inclusion, you know, those words, DEI, I think sometimes can turn people off. Some people feel more alienated by them. Some people really embrace them. At the end of the day, they're just words, right? What are we really talking about here? Diversity is all people. Equity is all things for those people that they need to do well and to succeed. Inclusion is, do you feel like this is a space where you can be yourself, where you can belong and you can actually thrive? Are you given the opportunity that the peers around you are given to succeed? Those are the things that we care about. We care about all people being in this place and being able to have what they need in order to succeed and to thrive, and giving them opportunities so they can grow in their careers and be fantastic attorneys. And so how do we do that? Part of it is what you were talking about. Can we recruit a diverse class? And diversity, you know, capital D diversity, you know, it's all things. So racial diversity, ethnic diversity, gender diversity, religious diversity, diversity of perspective and thought, understanding that diversity of perspective and thought can exist in multiple ways, but oftentimes does come from some of those identifiers that we live with. People see what we look like, and they know that they are witnessing a particular individual. Folks look at me, they see a Black man, you know, and that informs how you treat me. And the aspiration is for us to be treated equally, but sometimes, you know, we treat people differently based on background. It's true for, you know, for kind of anything that you're thinking about when we're looking at like the sociology 101 of it all. I think that the way that we really advance these efforts and create an inclusive environment is by centering conversations that matter and how we have those conversations. So we talk so much about respectful dialogue and respectful disagreement because we work at an institution that is so broad in the kind of people that it's bringing in. You know, you've got folks who are from all parts of the spectrum, and that means you're going to meet people here who are your tribe, mm-hmm. and you're going to meet people here who are so different from you in perspective and ideology and faith and belief. And can you engage with both of those groups in respectful ways? Can you honor, you know, so big C Catholic, golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated. Can you extend the humanity to another individual that you don't agree with on a lot of different issues? So how do we normalize conversations to get students trained in the art of doing that in a country, in a world, in a climate where that is not the example that we tend to see? Mm-hmm. And so really centering those conversations, everything from imposter syndrome to LGBT inclusion in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. You know, how do we bring that to the table and let people talk about it in a way that gets out their questions, their concerns, their thoughts, but does it in a respectful mm-hmm. way?
Right. One way we do that is the DEI podcast with Max
Guest. Subscribe.
Plug for that.
Okay, so we're running on time, so let's start to wrap up here. Another quick question. Any advice to a sophomore at a small liberal arts school who dreams of attending Notre Dame Law?
Sure. This sounds like a very specific question from an individual, although I'm sure there is, you know, more than that one person out there who maybe has the same question. I hope that from the rest of the conversation that we've had today, that each person or applicant who's maybe listening to this is understanding that we're really trying to build a diverse class and we want to get to know you as an individual. So, you know, if that is your perspective coming from a small liberal arts college and you have a drive to attend Notre Dame Law School, you know, we're hopefully going to learn quite a bit more about you, you know, from the application. You know, we certainly have students at our school who fit that background, and many, many others. I mean, if you just even look at the list of undergraduate institutions that are represented among our student body, just in the 1L class alone, which is only 181 students, there are 111 different undergraduate institutions represented. And that's pretty typical of each of our incoming classes. And so not to maybe worry about what your background is, you know, coming into Notre Dame, but as we've said, you know, so many times throughout this podcast, of focusing on, you know, what is important to you? What are your values? What are your goals? What have you, you know, accomplished? What characteristic would you like to highlight in the application? And then again, how do you articulate all of that through the application itself in response to our prompts and, you know, making sure that all of that's coming through in the application. So we're really excited to read your application, especially if you are excited about Notre Dame. This is speaking to that that one person who asked this question, but also to everyone we know you put a lot of time. We know you put a lot of effort into these applications and that we recognize that and that's important to us.
Mm. And last question, really speaking to next steps of it all. How do I sign up for a law school tour? And I'll just expand on that. If people want to learn more about the law mm-hmm. school, learn more about our programs, the culture here, how can they find that information out?
Sure. To answer the more specific question, technical question of just how do I sign up for a tour, we do host visits at our law school every Monday and Friday, although we're willing to work with students on other days in the week, the regular visit will include an observation of an actual 1L class. You just go to class with one of our 1Ls, a student-led tour of the law school, as well as an information session with our admissions staff. And so there's a lot that you can get out of that visit. So we encourage students who, you know, who want to come, or especially if you're going to be in the area already, to sign up for one of those visits. And that's posted on our website. We have a registration form that's available right now through the fall semester, but we'll, you know, set up a registration for the spring once we get closer to that semester. We do have special programming for admitted students. So for students who are in the process of applying right now, if you want to wait until you get your admissions decision, and if you are admitted, we have special programming, and we also offer travel stipends to all admitted students. So that might be something to consider as you start planning a visit to campus. In terms of just overall learning more about the law school, our staff right now is traveling to events all around the country. So we look forward to meeting those students on the road, wherever we go. And then we also host virtual sessions. That registration is also on our website. It is separate from the visit registration, so depending on which one you're looking for, you'll find a different link. But we do Zoom sessions every other week. We try to change the timing of those Zoom sessions so that we can make that available, especially to people who are coming in from different time zones or who may have different schedules with work or school. And so there are a lot of different ways to learn about Notre Dame Law School. Obviously, our website has a lot of information on it. We try to connect our prospective students with our student ambassadors as well. So the same people who are giving the tours at the law school are also happy to correspond with prospective students via email or maybe even a quick Zoom.
Mm. Marisa Simon is the Director of Admissions at Notre Dame Law School and an invaluable resource when it comes to law school admissions. Marisa, thank you for all of this helpful information and for, again, being the DEI podcast's guinea pig and joining me as our first in-studio guest.
Thanks, Max.
The DEI podcast at Notre Dame Law School is produced by Notre Dame Studios. Every episode, we sit down with important voices in law, culture, society, and business to talk about issues that touch all of us. If you liked what you heard today, become a subscriber and get notified every time we upload an episode. And tune in next time for another great conversation on issues that touch us all. Until then, take care.